Hi, everyone. This is Eve Harrow on Rejuvenation for the Land of Israel Network. Today is December 18th, 2016, the 18th day of Kislev 5777. I'm home after a couple of very interesting weeks in the United States. I got a gift from the lady sitting next to me on the plane, who was coughing and sneezing for like a good part of my ride home, which is why I sound like this right now. So I do apologize, but we will get through this. I was in New York City for the launch of the Museum of the Bible, and we're going to get into that in just a few minutes. Went down to Florida, brought there by the Jewish National Fund, spoke to schools, doctors, different women's groups about the importance of Israel, the truth behind the news, you know, some of the projects that they do, which are so helpful to the people living here. And then ended up my trip on the West Coast in Los Angeles and in San Diego, speaking at a synagogue in San Diego, also at a women's group at someone's home in Los Angeles. Someone's organizing a mission to Israel in May to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the liberation of Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria. I'm going to be guiding them for a couple of days. And so I spoke to them about the trips, more details, and to get them, you know, a little more knowledgeable so that they will not want to miss being in Jerusalem at this really momentous occasion. But it's great to be home, but like the journey continues. And the first part of my trip in New York City at the launch of the Museum of the Bible was really, really interesting. It was like a last minute addition to the trip where I was told I should come and that it would be worthwhile. It absolutely was. Met wonderful people there who are large-hearted, large-spirited, very devoted to the Bible and to the cause of having a museum to the Bible, a non-denominational museum to the Bible, with the feeling that Americans don't know their Bible. And I have to say that when I guide religious Jews here in Israel, very often people who have gone to Jewish day school and are very steeped in Torah learning, I am unpleasantly surprised at the amount of Bible that they do not know. They know Torah. They know from the portion of the week that we read every week on Shabbat. But the other books, what we call Nach, Nevi'im, and Ketuvim, the prophets, the books of Samuel, the books of Kings, a lot of people just don't even know like basic stories. Like when I talk about, you know, before he was king, when David was a mercenary, and I get like blank looks, like what? I said, yes, like what do you think was going on there? And that's a shame because it's an unbelievable book on so many different levels. And so, well, I'm going to stop talking right now, and we are going to hear from Jackie Green, one of the initiators of the project, along with her husband, Steve. So here is Jackie Green in her own words, recorded the morning after the launch of the event in New York City a couple of weeks ago. And then I will be back. Sitting in New York City with Jackie Green, and she and her husband, Steve, are the initiators of an incredible project, which I was really honored to be at the launching event last night and here at the breakfast, eat some blueberries and raspberries and hear more about it this morning. So first of all, Jackie, thank you. I know you have a plane to catch and I appreciate you making a few minutes. What is the Museum of the Bible?
Well, that's a big question and there's a big answer, but I think the short answer is it's just a place that all people can come together to engage with the Bible. And whatever level that they're comfortable with, you know, whether they want to just see the artifacts or they want to see the history of the Bible, or there's a history floor, a narrative floor, and an impact floor. And so they can just take it to whatever level they want. We're going to have 430,000 square feet of space with many items, and it can be also very interactive. We have a theater and a meeting space for lectures, and there's a scholar area where they can listen to scholars. So it's just a lot of things, and it's for all people.
So why you? Why you and your husband? You know, the Bible's been around for a long time. There are a lot of little museums around. You go, almost every place has a little room where there's some artifacts, and obviously in Jerusalem there's a big, you know, Bible Lands Museum. Why you? Why now? Why Washington, D.C.?
You know, I've wondered that myself, but but God doesn't always use the people that we think he's going to use to do things. And we've seen that throughout time and through the history in the Bible. You know, we all read the stories and we think, why? I wonder why he did it that way. Well, I have asked myself, why us and why now? But I think it's just God's perfect timing. And I think he just needed people that would just go for it and not be intimidated by the largeness of this project. And we feel just called to do it, and we're willing, and we're just giving it all we've got. And the Bible has been such a foundation in my life and in my husband's life and in our family, for all of us. We've always had a love for the Bible, so that was a natural fit for us. And we didn't see this coming in life, but God did. And so we're just willing to just do our best to make it happen.
So what's your personal story that enabled you to do this?
Well, first of all, having a foundation in the Bible and a love for the Bible, you know, that's the main thing. Secondly, we have a family business that we were able to start a collection. And initially, we just thought we were going to have some items to donate to someone else for a museum. But then we realized we had this growing, fabulous collection with just treasures. These artifacts are just such an amazing thing, a gift really to the world to be able to study and to see. And so we found ourselves with a collection, and we're not collectors. And then we realized, you know what, we need to make sure this is done and it's done well and done right so that the world can see these items. And so, you know, we didn't see that coming, but here we are. And it's just a blessing for us to be able to be a part. So
I see your kids are also involved. I met a few of them here.
Yeah, we have a couple of our children that are working with the Museum of the Bible in different areas. But then again, you know, largely our whole family has been a part with supporting, but just to get it started. And we're just really hoping and praying for many people to come alongside us. It's a large project. I think if we just needed to do it well and do it right and with a standard of excellence. And so it's going to take a lot of people to come alongside and help support a museum of this size. And
and that's why you're doing it in Washington, D.C., because people go there for the museum?
Well, in Washington, D.C., that's largely where people plan trips to go see, you know, museums and that type of trip. You know, they go to other places if they're wanting to do an amusement park or, you know, different trips. But this is a place where many people come and just they want to see history. They want to see they're interested in the culture, and they're walking around and going to lots of museums. And so it's a wonderful fit for us for this museum. And we have a fabulous location. It's just about 3 blocks from the Capitol. And there's a metro right at our block, so it's easy access. And we've just been really fortunate to find a location that fits this need so well.
But you guys live in Oklahoma, so this is far. You're traveling back and forth all the time.
Yeah, a lot of travel. And we are in the middle of the U.S. and D.C. it's not a bad trip, but it is. Yeah, there's quite a bit of travel involved, and we're just giving it all we've got.
What kind of reactions are you getting from people? There's a lot of people who associate the Bible with religion, which is understandable since the major religions come out of the Bible. And I try and explain to people, and I'm sure you do also, that the Bible is bigger than that. It's so much history. It's not just history, but it's so much stories of how people should be with each other, not just vis-a-vis God. How do you see that?
Well, the Bible has something for everyone. And whether it, you know, whatever their religion, whatever faith they embrace, it's an amazing historical book. And if for no other reason you want to engage with it, that's fabulous to look at the history of the Bible throughout time. And there are wonderful stories. There are things that in the Bible that give hope and give peace. And, you know, I think it's a valuable tool. And I think it just is something that many, many people will enjoy learning more about in a comfortable, safe atmosphere. This is very non-sectarian. It's not about a religion at all. It's just about the Bible.
Thank you. Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you.
So I think that you see what I'm saying about the caring of the Bible, that and the
this tremendous initiative. It's a very large project that they want other people to be a part of, not just something. Maybe they could pull it together themselves. They've done very, very well in business. But they want it to be a project of a lot of people. So, you know, it's not the first time in history that something needs to have people involved, because when you are involved in something, it's a part of you, even if you just give a little bit. In Judaism, that's a very old story with the temple, right? Everyone who went to the temple had to bring a half a shekel, because it wasn't just, at least theoretically, towards the end, it turns out to not be what it was supposed to be. But the temple was supposed to be a place where everybody was equal. Everyone brings their half a shekel, and you don't have, you know, like the courtyard donated by the so-and-so family. And so they feel that they can run the show. And that kind of equality in front of God, that we're all the same, is a very important message in the Bible and in Judaism. We all have a direct relationship with God. It's nice, not to make the comparison with the temple, of course, but it is nice that that the Greens feel that, you know, they want other people to get involved. What I was very impressed with, I have to say, is that the dinner was strictly kosher. I was not the only person there by far who keeps the laws of kashrut, but I figured this happens at so many different events. Either you come and you don't eat, or you find some vegetables or something, or very often when it's known that there are going to be Jews there who keep the laws of kashrut, then there's a table set aside with kosher food, and that's just fine. The entire event, the entire dinner was strictly kosher. Everybody there ate kosher. And I was very, very pleasantly surprised. And I see that there's been a tremendous effort that's being made here, that the people of the book, that the Jews who brought the Bible to the world, feel not just included in this Museum of the Bible, but very much a part of what's going to be happening there. I don't take for granted the fact that something like a Bible museum is going to have the sensitivities, not just sensitivities, but really a sense of inclusiveness. Which is really very, very important. So that's supposed to launch in a year, November of 2017, and the museum itself in Washington, D.C. So stay tuned. That's going to be quite an interesting project, and I'm looking forward to checking it out and learning some more Bible myself. There is no end to what you can learn. We're going out for a quick break. I just want to wish everybody next week, we start the holiday of Hanukkah, the Festival of Lights, which is the battle of the few against the many, the good against the evil, the people who turn up the light higher when the darkness encroaches. And you just got to say, I mean, that story happens in like the -160s, right, BCE, but it could be on today's news. Some things just never change. So happy Hanukkah, everybody. Going out for a short break, Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. I will be right back.
The best place to stay in Jerusalem is at Windows of Jerusalem Vacation Apartments. Check out their website, www.windowsofjerusalem.com. They've got beautiful 1, 2, 3, 4 bedroom apartments in the best location in the city center with the most beautiful, breathtaking views. And I mean breathtaking. I've stayed there a number of times myself. And I'm telling you, there are few places anywhere in the city where you can take it all in to this degree. The view, the location, the great apartments, plus the wonderful staff will truly make you feel at home in Jerusalem. Book your stay now at windowsofjerusalem.com.
This is Eve Harrow, host of Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. My maternal grandparents, Grandpa Morris and Grandma Lily, came to the United States from Russia over 100 years ago. They belonged to the Mizrahi movement, way before there was even a state of Israel. The Land of Israel Network is powered by the Mizrahi World Movement.
Hi, everybody. Eve Harrow. It's still December 18th, 2016. You're listening to Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. Love getting feedback from my listeners, so please write to me, eve@thelandofisrael.com. Of course, always hitting the ground running here, so even though I just got back, already thinking about the next time going to the States
in March. I'll be going to APAC, to the America-Israel PAC meeting, where incidentally I went to an evening that they had when I was in Florida. Brett Stevens, who's so great, from the Wall Street Journal. So he spoke at an evening there. And I just have to say, like, a little bit of a niggle thing here. That wasn't kosher, okay? And it was a dessert night, and I was, like, so excited. You know what they call those macaroons? They call them macaroons, even though I don't know why they call them macaroons, because in my mind, macaroons are like these coconut cookies that we eat on Passover. But in the last few years, they're those colorful, like, sandwich cookies with the cream inside, and they're just, like, so good, and they've got these great flavors, like passion fruit and whatever. Anyway, so I get to this event, and I love those cookies, and they're very hard to make, by the way. Even my daughter, who's a culinary expert, every once in a while they flop because they have to just like be so and like be fluffy and whatever and get air in them. In any case, so I get there and I make a beeline for those cookies because they are like really like one of my favorite desserts. And then somebody says to me, you know, over there, there's a table that says kosher with some like sad looking brownies on it. And by inference, that meant that the rest of it wasn't. So I thought to myself, wasn't it? So okay, fine. So it saved me a lot of calories, which I suppose is a very good thing always. But I thought to myself, here we go. You know, at this launch of the Museum of the Bible, everything is strictly kosher. And here at an APAC event, it's not. So just like count that into my little why. Anyway, so back in Israel, you know, here we've got the news about Amona and what's going to happen up there. And I just hope that a compromise is found. I don't think that watching pictures of Jews getting dragged out of their homes is going to be good for anybody, and least of all for them. I'm still traumatized by Gush Katif 11 years ago, where I was there until the very last day, moved down there with a few of my kids for the last summer. And it's something that is just a terrible thing to see. It's not what our army or our police are meant to do. And I certainly hope that during the next few days, people get together and figure out a compromise and so that this doesn't have to happen. We don't have to see these scenes and that nobody gets hurt. Of course, there's no small irony that the ridge upon which Amona sits is also the ridge of Har Baal Chatzor, where we have, according to tradition, that's where Abraham stands and sees all the land and is promised by God that his children will get this land as an everlasting covenant. It's one of the highest places in the land of Israel, 1,016 meters above sea level. And it's also where Judah the Maccabee, the hero of the Hanukkah wars of the Hashmoneans, the brother who leads the nation into battle against the Seleucids, against the Greeks, and also against the Jews who are Hellenizing, the Jews who are adopting the mores of the politically correct world at the time, if you will, the Greek values as opposed to Torah values. Whoa, do some things never change? But then it's the eighth battle, and Judah the Maccabee is killed up on that hill. So it's just like certain places just repeat themselves in the stories and in the battles and in the things that happen there. See it over and over again where I live here in Gush Etzion, where there were also two battles of the Maccabees. One of them we lost. It's the fifth battle of the Maccabees. The youngest brother Elazar is killed here in Gush Etzion. That's where there's a community now called Elazar here in Gush Etzion. The battle is lost. However, we hold Jerusalem. And the same thing happens here in 1948, where in the battles of Gush Etzion during the War of Independence, where we accept the UN partition plan and the Arabs reject it and wage war on us, we also lose here in Gush Etzion. And that's why for 19 years, Gush Etzion does not have Jews in it. It's ethnically cleansed of its Jews, which is why even today we have to battle for the right to being here. Some people don't realize that perhaps ethnic cleansing is not the way to decide who lives in a certain place. But Jerusalem holds. The battles here are strong enough. Even though we lose the battle, we win the war. And really, in that sense, that happens here. And so the same things that happens with the Maccabees happens 2,000 years later here, and there are just certain places where history seems to repeat itself on that place. So even we lose that eighth battle up on the ridge where Amona is. And so it's possible that maybe this is a situation where we need to lose this particular battle To win the war, I don't know. I don't know, but I do know that somebody needs to start making some serious decisions and what should have been done 50 years ago and putting sovereignty on Judea and Samaria so the Jews don't have to fight really nasty people who just like invent things and pull things up and do all kinds of ridiculous things in order to get Jews out of their homes. This doesn't happen anymore. It's like really enough. And I think everybody has just had it. It's time. There's a vacuum here, absolutely, that of sovereignty, and it's time to close that down. We won this in a war against us. The Jews are living here. Even some of the big people on the left realize that the Jews are not leaving here, and it's time to put Israeli sovereignty on Judea and Samaria, which I do not believe, and there are many, many other people, the same thing, does not mean giving citizenship to the Arabs that are living here. That doesn't have to go hand in hand, and it doesn't make us an apartheid state if we don't. So that is a much longer discussion for a whole other different show, but I just hope that before our Festival of Lights, before Hanukkah this year, somebody, like a light goes on somewhere and we realize that, this has to be solved once and for all. You know, we look around and we see what's going on in Syria, which is heartbreaking. There are some reservists apparently who want Israelis to go in and get involved in the war in Syria. I do not think we should get involved in the war in Syria. Yes, it is heartbreaking to see what Muslims are doing to Muslims, and just once again proves that nobody really cares about Muslims except when they're fighting the Jews. And I'm happy that it hurts us, and I'm happy that Israel is treating people who've been hurt there in hospitals in the north, and I hope that we continue to do so. However, I do not think that we should get involved in the war in Syria and weaken ourselves with the wars around us. To talk about history repeating itself, when the Muslims first started off in the 7th century, how were they able within 20 years to take over so much land? Well, the Byzantines, the Christian empire at the time, and the Parthians, the Persians, had been fighting each other for many centuries and weakening each other. And so the Muslims come in and in a 20-year blitz essentially take over both empires, both the Byzantine and the Parthian empires. Okay, well, we don't have too many Christians left in the Middle East. The Muslims have made sure to ethnically cleanse the Middle East of almost all its Christians. But we do have a Western world that is Christian, so that's still a player. And we still have the Parthians, Persians, and that's Iran, and they're still a player. And we still have the Muslims, the Sunnis, and they're a player. Okay, so you still have more or less the nations. Things have shifted around a little bit. And we have to be careful because we can feel that we want to do something, we want to help, but we also, in some sense, might then weaken ourselves and don't fool ourselves that ultimately the goal is to come after both the Jews and the Christians and really take over the world. And so we have to be very careful. And yes, we need to figure out what to do to stop the slaughter in Syria. But I think that's way beyond something that Israel can do. We have to realize also that wars are being played for keeps. I mean, Assad wants to win this. He's gassing babies because he wants to win this war. All right. And, this isn't like a gentleman's war and nobody is playing nice. Okay. Israel's the only army and I think that it's way overboard. It sends text messages before we go into an area to warn the terrorists essentially that we're coming in. And, yes, war is horrible. War to a great extent is immoral. If you feel that being killed is immoral, then war is immoral. Except it is more immoral to die, and it is more immoral to weaken yourselves to the point where other people can kill you. And we have to be very, very careful here in the Middle East. And yes, I know people will bring up the analogies of World War II and how the world stood by why Jews are being killed. But you have to be also careful here when you make that comparison. It would not have endangered one American citizen had the United States Air Force bombed the railroad lines to Auschwitz instead of just the Farben factory right next to Auschwitz. All right. So when we say that the world didn't help as they should have in World War II, I think that there's a tremendous case that needs to be made. And doesn't necessarily apply to what's happening here. But we all have to realize that there are very, very dangerous things afoot here, not just in the Middle East, but around the world. And at what point do we get involved? And at what point do we say, like, we have limited resources and we have to be able to protect ourselves. And while Israel is very, very strong, thank God, this is only the third time in our history that the Jews have been sovereign in the land of Israel. We were sovereign in the land of Israel during the beginning of the First Temple period, not even the entire First Temple period. You can already make a case that after Hezekiah, after the Assyrians tried to attack Jerusalem and read the book of Isaiah and were deflected, already the last 100, 120 years of the First Temple period till the Babylonians come in and destroy the First Temple in minus 586, we were already somewhat of a vassal state to Assyria. We don't get sovereignty again, not under the Babylonians, not under the Persians, and under the Greek period until Hanukkah, which is why Hanukkah is such an important holiday. We have about 100 years where Jews control the land of Israel, where this is a Jewish state. We have Jewish kings who make a mistake because they are priests and kings, which is a very big no-no, and we've talked about that before. That idea of separation of church, if you will, and state is a biblical idea and a brilliant one, that there should not be absolute power. And part of the problem where they end up losing the Hasmonean state is because they mix that up and they bring it together. And then you start having all kinds of politics and then inviting in the Romans. And there we go. Okay, so we lose that Jewish state. We lose that Jewish state. And the next time that we get sovereignty back in the land of Israel, that the Jews have our own army and call Israel home and can defend Israel, is now, since 1948. So it's not something that we should take for granted. Next week when we say Al Hanisim, when we say the prayer for a miracle that happened here for Hanukkah, it is a miracle, but we need to be careful. We need to guard ourselves, both from enemies within and from enemies without, and not let history repeat itself. When it comes to the Hasmonean period, we have a temple and then we get sovereignty. Now we have sovereignty before we have a temple. So things are definitely different. But we need to understand how fragile things are and how sometimes a spur of the moment mistake or leading from the gut can lead to something much, much worse. So we have to keep that perspective in mind. Perspective is interesting. I'm reading a book that I picked up at the airport called SPQR by Mary Beard. It's a history of ancient Rome. I can't say it's the most exciting book that I ever read, but it was important for me to read it because when I was in Rome last August, I realized how difficult it is to appreciate Rome when you live in Judea, because what the Romans see as their victories and the Colosseum and the Forum and all these places that they built were built on the spoils with the money, the spoils from my temple and from my country, the gladiator games and the slaves that they had fight in their arenas where they played their awful games were my forefathers. And so everything is perspective. And to go and to appreciate Rome, which is what this book is all about, and Roman civilization is in very, very many ways antithetical to my own history. And so let's keep that perspective in mind. Okay, that somebody's victory is somebody else's loss and somebody else's gain is someone else's humiliation. And keep that in mind when we deal with other people in any relationship that we have. So I think I'm going to sign off for today and keep my voice for another day. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. If you're in Israel next week during Hanukkah, I will be running two trips, December 26th, to the area of Binyamin, the area where the Maccabees fought and hid out. That was their home base in the hills of Gofna, what we now know as Western Binyamin, to the areas of Dolev and Talmon, Neveh Tzuf, where many, many houses were destroyed by the last wave of terror arson, Michmash, and hopefully get up to Amona, which we will still be standing. And on December 29th, I'm going to do an olive oil trip to the area of Shiloh, where we're going to be really concentrating on that lovely liquid that lights the menorah. And doing UTV rides, seeing the Tell of Shiloh, visiting an olive press, making temple era crafts, and just having a wonderful time because we can. So if you're interested, write to me. I'll tell you more about those trips, running them for One Israel Fund. And I've got some other things coming up. And if you're not here in Israel, why aren't you here in Israel? Get over here. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a great week. Goodbye for now. Thank you.
folks, this is Jeremy Gimpel. I want you to know, if you're a non-Jew from a Christian background or just a full-fledged Christian and you want to come to Israel, the best program, tour, experience that you could possibly have is to go with HaYovel. Now, it's weird. I'm an Orthodox Jewish rabbi, and I'm telling Christians to go to this Christian ministry in the middle of Samaria. Let me tell you, there is no better experience for someone outside of the land, outside of the Jewish fold, to come into the land and work alongside the Jewish farmers of Samaria, to learn about the culture, to meet the people. It's an experience like no other, and I think it's also probably the cheapest way to travel to Israel. So go to HaYovel.com.
Josh Haston here, host of Israel Uncensored on the Land of Israel Radio Network at thelandofisrael.com. Make sure you check out my show every Monday, bringing you the news unfiltered and uncensored, information that you are not getting anywhere else, especially not in the mainstream media.
Israel Uncensored with Josh Haston on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com.